We're in Kazan, the capital of Tatarstan, and I know you're thinking, why on earth am I stood in front of a giant cauldron? Well, that's what Kazan means in Tatar. It's a symbol of hospitality, and it's very fitting for a republic famous for giving its guests a warm welcome. Rima, what are we making today?
Today we're cooking azu, Tatar style.
Okay, and what's azu?
In Persian, the word means small. Small pieces of meat in a spicy sauce. Mm-hmm. However, we Tatars don't cook in a spicy sauce. Among Tatars, there's also a belief that the word azu derives from azdi, meaning food. Mm-hmm. But still, we say that it originates from Persian, referring to finely chopped meat in a spicy sauce. Okay. That's how it translates.
Okay. Sounds delicious.
Now we're going to start cooking because the oil is ready. Mm-hmm. We pour in the oil. The first thing we need to do is fry the potatoes well. We don't add salt or anything else.
Okay.
Just fry them.
And I see that you're preparing over a kazan, an open fire here. Does this add to the taste of the food?
It gives a special distinct taste, a smoky flavor, an aroma. It's cooked until golden and crispy. The taste is entirely different. Since it's made over an open fire, nature itself adds to it. The smoke, the smoky flavor, it's wonderful.
Oh, I'm getting hungry already. And what would you say is so unique about Tatar food, Rima?
Tatar cuisine is truly unique. We originate from Turkic peoples, after all. Mm-hmm. Our cuisine blends both East and West, which makes it very interesting. Many different peoples have lived in our region because it was part of the trade routes, including the Silk Road. Merchants took the best, the most delicious dishes.
From different places.
That's why our cuisine is so flavorful.
Well, I can't wait to try it.
There isn't enough oil, we need to add more. We should also put the heat up, right?
Uh-huh.
So that it fries properly.
Well, shall we add some more wood, Rima? Okay, let's do it. Is that enough?
Sure.
So how has Tatar cuisine evolved over time?
Yes, things change over time. In the past, Tatars led a nomadic lifestyle, but now most are settled. They haven't been nomadic for a long time. That's one of our unique traits. Our culture is intertwined with many others. You can't take that away. In Tatarstan, many different peoples live together, and we take something from each of them. Even today, this continues.
Still. So it evolves with time, and you take the best bits from each ethnic group and introduce it into your own cooking.
The Mari, Chuvash, and Mordvins live alongside us. We're all neighbors. But still, our centuries-old cuisine has been preserved, passed down from our grandmothers. They taught us, and we pass it on to our children. It has been handed down from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm. And is this recipe from your grandma?
My mama.
Ah, okay.
More from my mother rather than my grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Are there any secret ingredients?
There's a secret ingredient. You see, it seems like it's just potatoes, meat, and onions, right? Mm-hmm. But a key ingredient here is pickles. They must be added.
Ah, okay.
However, every cook has their own way of making it. Mm-hmm. Some add carrots or other vegetables. But when I cook it, I don't include them.
Okay, well, it's no longer a secret now.
Yes, it's no longer a secret. Uh-huh. Everyone has their own little twist, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So we have garlic here.
We add garlic. Uh-huh. Pickled cucumbers.
I got to see. Uh-huh, we have gherkins.
We also add tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And by the way, as you can see, everything is cut thinly in strips. It's important to slice everything this way. But I cut the potatoes a bit larger so that they stay whole and don't turn into mush. That also matters. Now it's going to fry. I've increased the heat, so everything will turn out well.
Thank you. Oh, it smells wonderful, Rima. Yeah, looks delicious as well. Yeah.
Oops.
Uh-huh. There we are.
Do we keep me that one as well?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I can't wait to try it. Shall we go? Well, bravo. Thank you very much, everybody. That was beautiful. It's such a rich flavour, and you can taste how the smoke has also boosted the flavour as well. Thank you. There are so many new types of food here. I don't even know where to start. I do know these ones are called etchpochmaki. They're like pasties with different fillings. But why are they triangular?
I've been wondering that too for a while. So why are they triangular? First of all, that makes them very easy to bake. If you look at them here in a pan, you see that while the pan is round, they all fit in neatly because they're triangular. That's really handy. Also, they have this opening in the middle. Why do you think it's there?
I don't know. You tell me, Rima.
When our ancestors were nomads, they would take these pastries with them, as they were easy to eat on the move. And they filled the opening in the middle with some hot broth to warm them up. Also, it's a type of food that has everything in it. Bread, potatoes, meat.
It's like a full meal.
All in one, yeah. It's such an interesting dish.
And what do we have here? What's this sort of orangey-coloured?
We call it kort in Tatar, or red cottage cheese, right?
And why is it, what makes it red?
It stays on the fire for a very long time, and simmers for hours until it becomes red. We mix cottage cheese with milk first and keep it over the fire until the milk boils away.
Oh, right, okay.
And the cheese turns red. You're welcome to try it.
Okay, please.
How do you like it?
So it's sweet.
It's a dessert that goes with tea. We also add sugar and butter. Mm-hmm. It's a tradition for us, Tatars, to serve it sweet with butter.
And do you eat it on its own? No?
Yes, on its own with tea, or you can use it to cook other things.
You prefer this one?
Gubadia, yes.
Oh, gubadia.
Gubadia, yes. It's a traditional Tatar dish.
And what's in this?
One layer of the filling is the red cottage cheese. Then we have layers of rice, raisins, and boiled eggs, with melted butter on top.
And is it a dessert?
It's sweet. It's a dessert.
Okay, well, maybe we'll have some of that a bit later then.
It goes very well with tea. This is our traditional sweet pie that we serve on every holiday and at celebrations like weddings, birthday parties, and for Ash. That's when all the family gets together. We cook gubadia, we cook these triangles, we cook chak-chak.
Chak-chak, I know this
the
one.
The famous chak-chak.
I know this chak-chak. And it's like pastry infused with honey.
Yes, I've made this chak-chak myself.
Really?
Yes, and I want to say that this dish has an interesting origin. There was a Khan who had a son getting married, and he ordered his people to cook a dish that wouldn't go bad for a long time, so that people could take it home with them. And a shepherd's wife fried some noodles and added some honey on top. The Khan liked it, and when he spoke to his son and his new bride, he said, "See all these little bits in this dish? I wish you to have as many descendants. The shape of it is like a hill, and I wish you to go up in your life. It's sweet, and I wish your life to be as sweet as this honey." There are many meanings to chak-chak. And one more thing, the color.
So golden, uh-huh.
Yes, the color is golden coins. So he wished for them to have a lot of money. You see how much meaning there is to chak-chak? This is why it has been one of our most popular dishes for a very long time. It's a must for weddings. For example, a bride greets the groom holding chak-chak. That's our tradition.
If only she'd known when she made those noodles with the honey, the impact that she would have on Tatarstan.
And it's been our tradition ever since. We still keep it alive.
And I see that tea. You have a piping hot samovar here.
Yes, that's a samovar with hot tea.
An important part of the meal here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're right. It's a very important part because people discuss things over tea. They negotiate, solve problems, and so on. A tea party could last for 2 to 3 hours. And we always serve tea with some dried fruit and honey and herbs such as oregano, lime tree leaves, St. John's wort, thyme, all known to be good for you.
Local.
That's our tradition. We love having guests.
I can tell. And is it true that you have to have a minimum of 4 cups of tea?
Yes, if you want your guests to stay longer, so you could talk to them longer, you never fill their cup to the top. You just fill half.
Ah, well, you filled mine up.
So why a half? Because you can sip it little by little and keep talking. But if you're busy and would like your guests to leave soon, you would fill the cup to the top.
Okay.
As for 4 cups, it's about our tradition to have long tea parties. We can have even more cups of tea and talk for hours. That's how we like it.
Okay. Well.
This tradition is still alive. Our grandmas still like their tea time, and families talk about things at tea.
Oh, really?
People would even make marriage deals over tea for their sons or daughters.
Well, I better have a sip then, shall I? I heard that a 19th century Tatar journalist and traveller, he said that there were some similarities between the Tatar people and Japanese people, in that they were very polite and they don't like bothering other people. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
Yes, Tatars are similar in that way. We're very considerate and try not to cause trouble for others. Uh-huh. We try not to be pushy, not to be annoying or obnoxious. So yes, we're very tactful. It's just part of our culture. Mm-hmm.
Well, shall we eat our azu before it goes cold, Bima? That's it. Uh-huh.
Yes, let's start our feast now.
Now, you can tell a lot about a person from the clothes they wear, and this couldn't be more true when it comes to the Tatar national dress. It's not been relegated to the museums just yet, with local designers giving clothes here a contemporary twist. Lisan, how do you go about giving traditional national dress a second wind?
You know, it's probably in my blood. I am Tatar, after all. I mean, it's no surprise that a Tatar person in Tatarstan speaks Tatar and embraces the culture. It just comes naturally. Mm-hmm. This has been with me since childhood. I used to visit my grandmother in a village, and she taught me things like embroidery, national dishes, and the Tatar language. So it all comes from somewhere deep inside.
Mm-hmm. And what can you tell me about the main elements that characterize the national dress here and the significance that they have?
Every flower and every element has its own meaning. Take the tulip, for example. It's really loved in Tatarstan. It's basically a symbol of everything Tatar because the tulip represents rebirth. It's the very first flower to appear in spring. So it's a symbol of rebirth, of new life. And Tatars just, well, you won't find any Tatar design without this flower. And if we look at other elements, and you can actually create an entire coat of arms just from these ornamental patterns. There's a thing about Tatar designs that's not really done anymore, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But our grandmothers and great-grandmothers paid special attention to the patterns when they made their dresses. Let's take this one, for example. You could tell from the ornamental pattern what social class someone belonged to, which village or city they came from. It was especially women who decorated themselves this way. Uh-huh. This was very popular among Tatars, and now it's making a comeback, too. We can take a modern outfit and add a beautiful little flower pattern to it.
Mm-hmm. And I do see that flowers are very prevalent in the national dresses here, and I know that there's a certain significance given to even the direction that they're pointing. What can you tell me about that, please?
Tatar costumes mostly have plant-based patterns because Tatars are Muslims. And in Muslim clothing, you're not supposed to depict animals or anything with eyes. That's why it's mostly plants and flowers. As for the direction, that's a really good point you noticed. The direction the flowers face is very important. If all the flowers in a pattern are pointing upward, it represents rebirth. But if we look at a gravestone, all the flowers point downward. That means, well, that's the end.
Yeah. Well, I see a lot of the dresses here have quite long sleeves, like this one here. Why is that? It strikes me as being quite inconvenient.
The sleeves are a fascinating detail. The longer a woman's sleeves, the wealthier she was thought to be. I mean, you can't possibly work with very long sleeves. So wearing them showed that a woman would never need to work. And there was another important thing. Women wanted to have fair skin. They could cover themselves completely. Heaven forbid they'd get any sun. That would mark them as a peasant. But if they kept their fair skin, everyone knew right away they were wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and talking of riches, I've heard this phrase already in your republic, that you can often hear a Tatar woman before you see her because of the necklaces, the earrings that she's wearing. Why are they also so prevalent in the national dress here?
All of this worked as a protective charm. When a woman walked, she would jingle, and that would ward off the evil eye and bad spirits. And here's something important. Bilizyak, that's a bracelet in Tatar. A married woman had to wear them on both arms to show she had a good relationship with her husband, that they lived well together. An unmarried woman would only wear one, so everyone could see she wasn't married. So you really could read a lot from a person's costume.
And I also know that the izyu is also quite a prevalent item of jewelry in the national dress here. Was it purely decorative, or did it also serve a practical purpose as well, maybe back in the day?
Izyu isn't just any decoration. In the old days, it was sewn onto the dress. Mm-hmm. I'll show you one right now from my collection. It was sewn onto the dress and covered with all sorts of decorations. The wealthier the woman, the fancier they were. Here we have different coins, marjanar, or beads, all kinds of little stones and so on.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lisan, thank you very much for telling me some of the mysteries of the national dress here. Thank you. Tatarstan is famous for its leather work, and that tradition has been kept alive by one family who've been in the shoe business for an impressive five generations. Rustan, first of all, I'd just like to thank you for your hospitality. I know that here in Tatarstan, you can't have any serious discussion without a cup of tea. So thank you very much. Now, how did you end up carrying on your family's business?
As a matter of fact, nobody in my family had ever thought I'd become a cobbler or shoemaker. To me, my dad's lasting pincers were a toy I'd always played with, as were wooden shoe lasts. I grew up surrounded by that, but I actually majored in economics at university. The change happened in 2011. On a trip to Italy, I went into a shoemaker's store, and the smell of leather and glue, all the magic I saw there, struck me like lightning. I couldn't think of anything else after that. I spent the rest of my trip at that store, looking, admiring, soaking things up. When I got back to Russia, it became clear that the profession of my father and grandfather had always been my calling. I just hadn't realized that before.
Well, I can see here you produce some fantastic modern shoes here, but how popular are the more traditional Tatar styles?
While we mostly specialize in making modern fashion shoes, We've been seeing more and more orders for ethnic shoes recently. Those don't have to be strictly in the national style. What customers want to see is elements of national costume that would remind them of their history, their people. We often complement modern shoes with a touch of Tatar-style stitching or mosaic embroidery patterns.
Can you show me, please? I've seen some ones down here. Thank you.
Wow.
These are our ichigi, a popular kind of national shoe.
So what is this embroidered element here, and is it difficult to make?
The technique is essentially leather marquetry. Leather patches are not sewn on top of the main layer. It's three kinds of leathers patchworked together. It's our way of customizing shoes and emphasizing the beauty. It's the Kazan stitch that has made our region famous since the late 18th century.
So this is the Kazan stitch. What's so special about it?
The most unique thing about the Kazan stitch is that it's done strictly by hand. No machine has ever been able to repeat it.
Even today?
To this day, it's strictly handmade, using a special wooden mount. In this technique, the needle pierces the leather at a different angle every time, and the leather must be tensioned depending on where the needle is positioned. It's something that even artificial intelligence can't imitate yet. Plus, it's very intricate, painstaking handiwork.
Mm-hmm. It looks extremely detailed, of course. I'm sure that things have come on a long way over the centuries that your family has been making shoes. But what sort of innovations are you introducing now to make and to sell shoes?
When we started, our manufacturing processes were very old school. There was this tailor's meter. A customer would sit down here, and I'd make an outline of their foot. One of our most prized achievements so far is our Shoe Last modeling software. With a special scanner, we can analyze a person's foot and get all sorts of data. We feed that data into special software that models a shoe last tailored exactly to the customer's foot. The resulting shoes are super high quality, very comfortable to wear, and of course, that's good for your health.
Of course. And that brings me on nicely to my next question. I've heard that traditional tartar shoes are very comfortable, and we have one here that you made earlier, and it certainly looks extremely comfortable. Is that so? And what's this unusual hook shape at the end?
Well, maybe we put a bit more love into all this, but that's for you to judge. Regarding this hook nose, this shoe is called gutal. I call them the Tataro-Mongol ichigi. This shape dates back to ancient times, when our ancestors would go hunting on skis. Essentially, what we're looking at here is a ski boot. Just a very fancy one.
Nice. But now they're more like retro chic, or fashion, yeah.